Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Fantasy Foot Beer Podcast. I'm James Kemp, joined, as always, by my good friend and fierce fantasy rival, Dr. Michael Stewart. Dr. Stu, how's it going, buddy?
Oh, it's going well, James. Thank you for asking. It was a very annoying day at work today, and I'm looking forward to the rest of this week even less. But before I have to do that, I get to talk about football with my friends, and we've got some powerhouse teams to talk about, lots of interesting things, fantasy implications, got all the information to break down for everybody out there. But first, before we get into that, James, I want to know how you are doing this evening.
I'm doing all right. It's been a rainy day here in northern Illinois.
It's been a rainy week. I don't really have honestly. It's just been raining nonstop.
Well, we haven't gotten as much rain. Like, started raining last night, and it's been raining all day today. Not a whole lot to report here other than that we had a tree removed from our backyard yesterday, and we're getting a new one tomorrow. So, you know, arborist stuff. But we do have a good show planned for you all today. Probably our most relevant episode we're going to record all summer in terms of divisional breakdowns. We've got two legitimate Super Bowl contenders, one of them the reigning Super Bowl champion. And basically, I'm not going to say every name we say today is going to be on your target list, but a pretty hefty amount of them should be. We're going to talk about two guys that are locks for the first round and guys who are going to be contributors basically all throughout your draft. So hitting the Seahawks and the Rams today. But before we do that, Dr. Stu, what are you drinking this evening?
Oh, yeah. So from New Belgium, I have the Voodoo Ranger Tropic Force. This is a tropical IPA. This is one I grabbed from a liquor store just outside of my work office. So I popped in there really quick. Hopefully they don't recognize me and wonder why their optometrist is just buying beer the second he gets out of work. But 9.5% alcohol by volume. So you probably expect some spicy takes by the end of this session. I'll probably bring up Baker Mayfield once or twice. James, let me know what you're drinking this evening.
So, man, Baker Mayfield. I guess he has played for the Rams. But
top 12.
Yeah, what am I drinking this evening? So I've been trying to think a little bit more about which beers I drink, because now that we're posting like our beer rankings and stuff, I realized, oh, I know people at breweries, they're going to see this stuff. And depending on what I drink, I could either be seen as a homer or lame or something else. But ultimately, I don't care that much about that. But I do think that we should kind of, give shout outs to good breweries that we like. And in kind of a day and age when so many bigger craft breweries get bought out by big beer brands like, not to throw shade at Stu from last week, but your Molson Coors, your Budweiser, those guys. It's cool when you see the big ones stay independent. So I'm drinking one from Revolution Brewing this week, their flagship beer, the Anti-Hero IPA, 6.7 ABV, an American hop assault. And this is a classic IPA, especially in the Chicago area. It's always plays all the time. So let's crack these bad boys in 3, 2, 1. And I don't know why I was surprised to learn that Revolution is still independent. I knew that Goose Island got bought by one of the big ones. And I think Lagunitas did too, but yeah, Revolution is just one you kind of see everywhere, and you're like, oh, they're huge. They must be owned by a big beer company, but no, they don't. Mm-hmm. They're independent.
Good for
I
them.
Think that's great.
Like America. Happy 250th birthday, America.
That's next week. We don't get to talk about that.
That's true. Yeah, we'll bring that up next week. I jumped the gun a little bit. I mean, yeah, wasn't the honestly. It was signed days before the 4th. It wasn't like the fourth wasn't the day it was all signed. It was just like, for lack of a better word, ratified. History teacher, help me out.
So if you want to talk about the moment when it was all kind of brought together, it was actually in August, but Kelsey and I did actually make Kelsey watch an American Revolution Ken Burns documentary last night. She complained through the first 10 minutes and then she was like, oh, this is actually kind of interesting. So,
well, 4th of August does not ring quite as well as 4th of July. That's for sure.
Not really. But if we're being super semantic, the Revolutionary War actually started in 1775. So, you know, we're a year over. But anyway, Stu, you want to talk about football?
I love football. It's one of my favorite things to talk about, James. Who are we
All
starting
right.
with?
Then in that case, let's start off with the reigning Super Bowl champion, Seattle Seahawks. And you've got a lot to talk about here. We could talk about the Gekbus. We could talk about JSN. We could talk about their new look running back core. But I want to talk. I think we should start with the wide receiver core because Jaxon Smith-Njigba had his true breakout season last year to become a wide receiver one, and he did it in style. He had high volume. He had high volume plays themselves. He had touchdowns. He did just about everything, and he looked like a dominant force for the Seahawks last year. Kind of furthering Sam Darnold as a franchise caliber quarterback. So, Jaxon Smith-Njigba. Going into rankings this year as the wide receiver three, I believe in PPR last year, he did also finish as the wide receiver three. So definitely a guy you want to target if you're going wide receivers in the first round. Outside of Puka Nacua or Ja'Marr Chase, there's really not that many more guys I would rather look at. We are actually going to talk about Puka later, but Jaxon Smith-Njigba, a very safe bet there. And outside of him, Rashid Shaheed came into the fold halfway through the season last year in a trade from the Saints, and he kind of immediately made his presence felt, not as much as a receiver, but definitely as a return man. In the playoffs, he did have some pretty big games as a receiver, but I wouldn't really expect him to be that extreme of a contributor in the receiving game, not with Cooper Kupp still there, not in the capacity that we really expect him to be that fantasy relevant, but he's still there, as well as little smatterings of Torrey Horton and AJ Barner here and there. But JSN, the big one to have. Stu, thoughts?
Yeah, so JSN wise, it's really a simple conversation. I mean, he was offensive player of the year last year. He had just under 1,800 yards receiving. He is a dominant force. As you said, 10 touchdowns as a wide receiver is a really, really excellent season. Might regress a little bit. Of those big three, and Smith-Njigba, Puka Nacua, and Ja'Marr Chase, he's definitely the one I would take third, but there's not really anyone else I would take over him. Middle to upper half of the first round, you're not going to have a whole lot of time to decide whether you want him or not if he's available. But if you get him, there's no reason to suspect that he should crater barring injury. So easy decisions there for JSN. Get him on your teams. As far as Cooper Kupp, Rashid Shaheed, and Torrey Horton, all of them are less than interesting unless, of course, like you mentioned, for Rashid Shaheed, he's going to have those return yards. If your league takes that into account, that is a great way to get ahead. So make sure you look up your league's specific scoring, and if that is going to be in, you know, in consideration, Shaheed might be a sneaky get in the later rounds. Kupp and Horton probably not super draftable at this point. I think Kupp is pretty toast, but Horton had a few good games. I don't know if anybody recalls, he had a few good games before missing the second half of the season with a shin injury. So he might be a sneaky name on waivers in the early parts of the season, or a name to keep an eye on through training camp. And there is one other name that we should probably mention, James. I'm always the draft pick guy, but oh, good old round number six. We do have Emmanuel Henderson Jr., the wide receiver out of Kansas, goes to the Seahawks as well. So that's a name that we still need to be aware of. Very unlikely to contribute anything significant in fantasy. Now, another name that you mentioned it a little bit in the offing, you didn't talk about him in depth, is AJ Barner, who is currently heading the tight end room for the Seahawks. Last year, just a rookie, had a very good, honestly, sneaky good rookie season. 6 touchdowns, nothing to sniff at, 52 receptions for 519 yards. For a rookie tight end, we don't usually expect too much unless your name is, you know, Tyler Warren or Colston Loveland or Trey McBride or something like that. Brock Bowers was a big rookie tight end that played well. To have a decent season as a rookie tight end, you're looking pretty good. And you know what? I'm over here talking a bunch of garbage because he was a rookie in 2024. Why does anybody listen to me? Anyway.
I listen to you.
He's sneaky good. I do like him a little bit. Definitely on waivers. Not really super draftable at this point. James, talk about the tight end who's not a rookie last year.
Yeah, I do know why you got mixed up those two. Elijah Arroyo was the rookie.
There you go.
Seahawks
there you go.
And he was Elijah Arroyo was one of the guys I was talking about when we were hitting the Seahawks this time last year. Who was like, he could be a sneaky secret breakout rookie because he was a super impactful player when he was at Miami. I believe it was Miami. But you're absolutely right about AJ Barner too. With kind of an ability to have an increased role with a real passer with Sam Darnold there behind center. AJ Barner, you know, I'm not going to say he made the most of his situation, but I think he came pretty darn close with what his skill set is. And it would surprise me if he doesn't end up on rosters as a streaming tight end at some point this year. We did see that happen last year. I want to say like 2 or 3 weeks out of the season, he was probably on our waiver list just to look at. But I would like to see him continue to take another step forward in year 3. As well as I'd like to see Elijah Arroyo take another step forward in year 2. Neither of these guys probably should be drafted. Actually, I'm going to go off and put my foot down. Don't draft these guys. But same as I was putting little stars on other guys you might want to look up for later in the season, put little stars next to AJ Barner and Elijah Arroyo just to see how they do. Now, I'd like to hit the running backs, if that's all right with you, Dr.
It's going to take a while to talk through them all. There's like 5.
There is, but I think that we can probably narrow it down to 2 that are actually going to be important, and those are going to be Jadarian Price and Zach Charbonnet. Zach Charbonnet, a name you know, a name I'm not going to probably say that you love, but you're familiar kind of with his game. You're familiar with how at times when he has been healthy, during the previous years, he has been able to take significant chunks of production away from Kenneth Walker, who is now in Kansas City. And now Kenneth Walker's role is replaced by Jadarian Price, who is taken at the end of the first round out of Notre Dame. As a guy who watches a lot of Notre Dame football, I think that Seahawks fans are going to see a lot familiar in Jadarian Price's game as what they saw with Kenneth Walker. I think probably something they won't see with Jadarian Price that they saw with Kenneth Walker was kind of, you could say that Kenneth Walker had some attitude. I'm not going to say attitude issues, but he was very expressive on the field and sometimes off the field, and that got him in hot water on occasion with his coaches. I think Jadarian Price is probably a little bit more of a level-headed guy, but his skill set, I think, is much, honestly, pretty similar to Kenneth Walker. So I think he steps into the Kenneth Walker role pretty much immediately. The thing to worry about, though, is Kenneth Walker didn't really become a huge fantasy asset until Zach Charbonnet got hurt last year. So that is really the thing that I'm worried about with this 1-2. You could see Jadarian Price as filling that vacancy, and with fresh legs and with kind of a better injury history than his counterpart at Notre Dame, Jeremiah Love, and saying this guy might actually be an improvement on Kenneth Walker for fantasy football. I'm going to kind of pump the brakes on that because I do think we're going to see a pretty even split between those two guys. And we know with rookie running backs who enter these kind of situations, usually it's a little bit more on the veteran to start, and then the rookie takes over later in the year. That's kind of what I'm expecting, but I'm not really expecting a full takeover, unless there's just injuries galore. I do think Jadarian Price is going to end up being the guy to own in this backfield, but maybe not immediately apparent in the season. I said a lot there, Stu. What do you think?
No, I think you're on the right path. It's not going to happen right away, in my opinion. I mean, call this backfield the House of Representatives, because this is a running back by committee. Like, you brought it down to two names, Charbonnet and Jadarian Price. Those are absolutely the 1A and the 1B. Whether it's Jadarian Price is the 1A and Charbonnet is the 1B remains to be seen. It's going to be like, put a pin in it. We got to watch how healthy Charbonnet is coming off of his knee injury through camp, and especially in just like the weeks leading up to fantasy drafts, you got to pay close attention to this. It's not going to be the same offense. Kubiak is gone. He's now the head coach of the Raiders, so we don't know exactly what kind of offense the Seattle Seahawks are going to run now under a new offensive coordinator. And in addition, for a couple more knocks against Charbonnet and Price for fantasy purposes, Emmanuel Wilson is not a bad real life running back. He comes over from Green Bay. He was the main beneficiary of Marshawn Lloyd always being hurt, if anybody remembers that. So 125 carries last year for 500 yards for Wilson. He's not exactly a slouch. And there's word that they want to use George Halani on third downs. There's just a lot of names, too many names for me to be super excited about this running back stable. Charbonnet and Price will definitely both be drafted in the probably seventh or eighth rounds. But in the early parts of the season, they're either going to be bench clogs for you, people that you're just keeping around like, I can't drop this guy. What if Charbonnet breaks his leg next week? Then Jadarian Price is going to be an RB1. We're going to hype train our way to the Super Bowl kind of stuff. They're going to be bench clogs or the highest priority waiver targets after one of them goes down and you're looking for the other. So nothing that I'm super interested in draft season wise, but I'm excited for this team overall, and running is still going to have to be a big part of their game. I mean, we're going to talk about him, and if he still has doubters, I still doubt a little bit, but Sam Darnold, you called him, what'd you call him? Gekbus?
The Gekbus.
I thought it was GQ bus. At least in my head, when I pronounce it, it's GQ bus.
GQ bus?
Yeah.
For those of you who are unfamiliar, GEQBUS, that is the God Emperor quarterback of the United States, Sam Darnold. I think we should give him a round of applause.
No.
No? Okay.
He won the Super Bowl, and honestly, it was a great story, but he's a better real-life quarterback for the Seahawks than he is a fantasy option. 27th in points per game last year at the quarterback position for a team that won the Super Bowl. That's not interesting enough for me. He's a little too boom or bust to be a constant week-in and week-out option, and there's going to be way better fantasy quarterbacks to look at, James. Anything different you got for Darnold?
No, I think that, no, you're probably not drafting Sam Darnold as a legitimate fantasy quarterback, but, where Sam Darnold goes, fantasy success usually follows. And I don't think that is something that we should take for granted here. JSN kind of ascended after he got there. We could see a big a big kind of season from Rashid Shaheed in his first season with, or first full season, I should say, with Sam Darnold and the Seahawks. But no, you're not drafting him, and you're not expecting him to be a regular contributor in fantasy football. I do think there's probably going to be a market for him as a streamer, depending on situation, in weeks when he will have to pass a lot. But no, you're not drafting him.
Nope.
You will probably draft Jason Myers, kicker for the Seahawks, and you will also probably draft the Seahawks defense. Jason Myers going into the season projected as the K4 and the Seahawks as the DST3. But let's go ahead and move on to the second team in our episode today, and that is the Los Angeles Rams. And these two teams have been building up quite a bit of a rivalry in recent years, especially this past year, where it kind of seemed all season like one of these two teams was going to win the Super Bowl, and that ended up being correct. But it also kind of seemed like this could go either way for the whole season. I think at different points during the season last year, during our episodes, we were like, so the Seahawks are going to win the Super Bowl, right? So the Rams are going to win the Super Bowl, right? And that was pretty early on. But talking about the Rams, they are basically as loaded as the Seahawks.
If not more.
I think maybe a little bit more. I think almost equally. But I think kind of where you have to start is with the wide receivers, starting with Puka Nacua, and then I would say second to none, but he's second to Puka Nacua right now, Devontae Adams. Puka Nacua, he's currently looked at as the wide receiver two. I think you could really honestly make an argument that he could be the wide receiver one. Just the volume that he gets is insane. And what he does with that volume is also insane. He excels as a slot. He excels in his ability to make people miss, especially up the middle of the field. So that is also kind of a key ability for Devontae Adams as well. The veteran, seemingly ageless wonder who had kind of a return to form last year. He's currently going as the wide receiver 24. We saw him hit into the wide receiver one category last year. Devontae Adams definitely still has some gas in the tank to perform well as well. Stu, what do you think of these wide receivers?
So Puka's my personal rankings wide receiver two after Jamar Chase. He's an incredible talent. He's basically a cheat code at the wide receiver position. The only knock that I have against him at all is kind of how well he protects himself. The way he plays the game reminds me of these people are younger than him, but he reminds me of them. But Scataboo and Dart, the people that are like, hey, they play the game hard. They do not care about their bodies. I really hope his brain isn't mush inside that helmet. I'm a little afraid of the injury possibility for him just because the risk seems a little bit higher, but it's not enough for you or anyone really to knock Puka Nacua down out of the first round or anything. You should take him if he's there. Like, it's, you're going to enjoy it. He's a gamer. He's an incredible talent. So he's also got a Hall of Fame quarterback, possibly Matt Stafford Hall of Fame.
A lock for
okay.
Sure.
I don't like to say things like that because then I get clowned for it. So I always put in
Matt Stafford,
put in possibly
Hall of Fame. Devontae Adams probably a lock for the Hall of Fame too.
Devontae Adams, I'm going to be a little bit harder on. He doesn't get the volume that I want to see. I mean, 14 touchdowns really buoyed him last year. He only had 60 receptions and just under 800 yards, and he was a wide receiver one, as you said. Like, that's screams regression for me. I'm not super targeting Devontae Adams unless it really falls my way or he starts to fall. I mean, there's no reason to think that he's going to be unusable. But, that's the only two wide receivers that are really pertinent at all. There's Jordan Whittington, and I feel like they drafted a No, they did draft a wide receiver in round six as well, CJ Daniels. But those two names are the only ones that matter, James. Can we just get tight ends out of the way? Because there's four of them, and none of them are draftable. Do you have any comments on them at all? Because pretty much what I just said, we're not drafting Colby Parkinson. We're not drafting Terrence Ferguson. We're not drafting Tyler Higbee. And we're not drafting their second-round selection in 2026, Max Clare, as well. So speak to them if you'd like.
Not as draftable players, but let's put special little star next to Max Clare. Just because spending a second-round pick on a tight end is, for especially the Rams, who are a team that notably does not use the draft, really. They get big players by trading their draft picks. Shout out to Myles Garrett. But spending a second round draft pick on a tight end is not something I think we should take for granted. I think they've been looking for somebody to kind of take the role as a lead tight end, and spending that kind of capital, is possible that they have confidence in him as a player to kind of push the ball to him, especially when quarterbacks, especially pocket passers like Matt Stafford, get older. They tend to look for more kind of reliable big targets. So that could be Max Clare, special little star, but don't draft him.
Mm-hmm. One thing to note is that they have so many tight ends. If they're playing so many tight ends, that could lead well to the running game. If you have extra blockers in there, extra big bodies on the line, that could be better for the Kyren Williams and Blake Corums of the world.
And speaking of the Kyren Williams and Blake Corums of the world, let's go ahead and jump over there. Kyren Williams currently listed as the RB15, kind of the symbol of, I don't know if unsexy efficiency.
Perennially undervalued is the word, I think.
Perennially undervalued. I have long been a big Kyren Williams fan. I've said it on the podcast. And that probably is also me being a Notre Dame fan. But Kyren Williams is a guy who I've been targeting a lot this year, depending on how the third round shakes out, just because he is so frequently a guy who gets the volume to be an RB1, but doesn't always need it. He scores a ton. He gets red zone targets. And as I've kind of recently been doing my own statistical deep diving, I've kind of been leaning towards the resolution that efficiency doesn't matter as much as we think it does. And volume doesn't matter as much as we think it does either, although it is extremely important. It's scoring and getting large plays, breakout plays in and of themselves. And Kyren Williams can do both of those things. So I continue to love Kyren Williams. I continue to love the position that he's in. Blake Corum, despite coming into the league with so much pomp and circumstance around him, seems to not be able to carve out a huge role with Kyren Williams there. Maybe this is the year that changes. Probably not. But I love Kyren Williams. I will stand on the table for him. Stu, will you also be joining me on the table, or are we still avoiding the table because of what happened last time?
I won't stand on the table. The table's going to collapse with both of us on it, and I don't really want to get hurt. But this running back stable is everything that the Seattle Seahawks stable wants to be, but just better. I mean, both of these guys could shoulder a large workload. It's just, we get to split it between them, and that's a really good thing for real life, not so amazing for fantasy. Still would draft Kyren Williams without any hesitation in my heart, and I would also draft Blake Corum somewhere between 3 and 5 rounds later with no hesitation in my heart. Not on the same team, though, but, you know, if one of them goes down to injury, you've got an RB1. Like, this is going to be a high-scoring Rams team. Their defense is also going to be really good. They're going to be winning games. That's great for running backs and their ability to run the clock out later in games. Goal line situations, you're going to be scoring more. You're going to be on inside the 10 more. I mean, Kyron Williams had 10 touchdowns last year. Blake Corum had 6 for his own part. These are players that you want on your teams. Like, it just boils down to that. Hopefully you pick the right one. But James, the last guy to talk about is Stafford.
Ty Simpson.
No. Their first round overall pick. Ty Simpson next year. Maybe Matt Stafford wins a Super Bowl this year and then rides off into the sunset. He, MVP, 4,700 yards passing, 46 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. My boy got him off waivers after your wife dropped him. Was really the only reason that I made the playoffs last year.
That's not
Matthew
true.
Stafford. He was a big part of the reason why I made the playoffs last year. Is he going to do it again? Yes. Maybe not an MVP again, but like, he's going to be a quarterback one, and that's pretty much all there is to it. I mean, if you have a guy throwing to Puka Nacua and Davante Adams every single game, you're going to want that quarterback. Get that quarterback on your team. You can also get him at a heavy, heavy, heavy discount as compared to the Jalen Hurts of the world or the Jaden Daniels of the world. Like, can you look me in the eye and tell me that you want Jalen Hurts or Jaden Daniels over Matthew Stafford for maybe for their rushing ability? Because Stafford's not going to do that, but which one of them is a better quarterback than Stafford right now? Like, honestly, James, talk.
I mean, how many times has a reigning MVP been ranked this low? I mean, he was elite as a passer last year after, if you recall, we weren't even sure if he was going to play.
Right, the back injury.
Yeah, he was banged up. He had surgery. We were, I think, mostly telling people to shy away from him because we weren't sure if he was even going to be ready to play this season. Or last season, rather. Matt Stafford is somebody who I am excited to wait for. I think kind of, I've said it before, this is a late quarterback year. You've got guys like Patrick Mahomes and Matt Stafford who are going pretty late, who are not even going as QB1s, with, you know, clear reasons why that is happening. But, these guys are kind of they're free real estate, to use a meme. And Ty Simpson is not a threat to Matthew Stafford at all. I don't think he would be a threat to most quarterbacks in the NFL. I think I said it in our pre-draft episode. I think if we had a better quarterback draft class this year, there's a good chance he wouldn't have been drafted at all. But Matt Stafford, I'm seeing him going in the 9th round right now. He is worth waiting for, I would say. And the Rams defense is also
really good.
Draftable.
Yeah. Defense 4.
Defense 4, which may go up with Myles Garrett and the alleged potential return of Aaron Donald. But Stu, I think that is everybody we have to talk about, unless I missed somebody, did we?
No, I don't think that we missed a single person, except for Baker Mayfield. But that's okay.
Do you want to talk about Baker Mayfield
today?
No,
it's okay. We know my opinions on Baker Mayfield. My guy. My G.
Stu.
God Emperor, Stu quarterback of the United States.
Oh, you can't do that.
Yes, I can. I mean, no, if Darnold is Vader, then Baker Mayfield is the Emperor. He's just behind the scenes.
That is a wild statement, but go ahead and give us your closing statement for the episode if you can top that.
How is that wild? Come on. This is
wild.
This is very logical. It's not logical, but it's made, you know, serious because I feel it and my feelings are more legitimate than anyone else's, and what I believe will happen. Baker Mayfield for president 2028. You can see on our socials that we're around, you know, Fantasy Footbeer on Instagram and on X as well. We take beer recommendations at our Gmail address, fantasyfootbeer@gmail.com. Basically, whenever I plug this, I then type in into my browser to pull up that email and see if there's anything. And I'll see it if you email us and you want to do some beer recommendations. Let us know what you want us to try on air. Voodoo Ranger, this was pretty good. I'm not even half done with it yet because it's so flippin' tall. But it's way better than any IPA has, you know, could possibly be. I hate IPAs, but I bought one anyway. James, save me from myself and wrap us up for the evening.
Dr. Stu, thank you so much for wrapping it up and for enjoying that Voodoo Ranger. Voodoo Ranger is a very enjoyable beer. It doesn't drink like a bitter IPA. It's more juicy, you know.
Mm. That's a that's a great adjective right there. I love my beer juicy.
But anyway, thank you all for listening today. We've gotten a slight spike in listenership recently, so that's pretty awesome. Tell your friends about Fantasy Foot Beer, and tell your friends about beers and fantasy football. The season is closer than you think. We are really only 2 months away from it being legit draft season. People in dynasty leagues are already drafting. People who are drafting with 24-hour draft timers are some of them already drafting. Stu, our 24-hour draft timer draft starts next week.
Heck yeah.
So be ready, be aware, stay frosty. Fantasy football is coming at your face. And for Dr. Michael Stewart, for Pixel the Cat and Indy the Dog, I'm James Kemp. Good night.